TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Amira Haas, Thoughts About Suicide Bombers and Their Families. Amira Haas is the only Jewish-Israeli correspondent on Palestinian affairs who is living among the people she reports on. When an Israeli tank recently pulled up in front of her apartment in Ramallah, she decided not to use her privilege as an Israeli to protect herself. Instead, she made her escape through the back door. Amira Haas is the daughter of Holocaust survivors and a writer for the large daily newspaper Haaretz. By the end of 1993, she had moved to the occupied Gaza Strip and reported on daily news from there. In 1997, she made the very brave move to Ramallah, where she still lives today. Her features and op-ed pieces are disseminated widely in the international press. Her most recent book is a collection of articles. Reporting from Ramallah, an Israeli journalist in an occupied land. Amira Haas spoke at the University of California, Berkeley in October 2003. The Center for Middle Eastern Studies had invited her for her talk about suicide bombers and their families. Amira Haas received a standing ovation.
Thanks. I've chosen this very difficult emotional subject of suicide bombers and their immediate surrounding and their organizational background because it has become a phenomenon that we cannot disregard. Of course, no Israeli disregards this. Many Israelis think it's the focus of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict now. Many people in the world believe that this is the reason for the conflict. Well, let's all put off all the mobiles now. I thought it was only an Israeli and Palestinian disease. So in the course of the coming hour, I'll be able to at least show my reason to think and to believe that this is not the cause of the conflict and of the problems, but still we have to relate to it very carefully because it certainly is a phenomenon. And as just a week ago, an acquaintance of mine in Nablus said that one needs only 5 minutes in order to convince a Palestinian youngster to go and commit a suicide attack against Israelis. So this phenomenon needs our attention. Now I find myself also in a very, as somebody who wants to understand this phenomenon, I find myself in a difficult situation because I don't trust the reports of the Israeli Shabak, of the Israeli intelligence. Not because they are not accurate. They are full of details, family details, background, organizational background, all such things that sometimes miss from Palestinian reports. But when an intelligence agent goes and examines or even talks to would-be suicide bombers who were caught on time, I don't believe he or she, these agents, are able to really to grasp this phenomenon. They are too much drowned into the vocabulary and narrative and understanding of a victimized Israeli society, and they don't see at all their position as occupiers. So this is one part which I cannot rely on, one source of information which I cannot rely on. Another source of information which on which I cannot rely are the families. Or when I go directly as a journalist with other journalists immediately after a suicide bombing to the family of a perpetrator, what I hear is that they are all behind this deed, they are all happy, they are sure that the suicide bomber is thriving now happily in heaven, etc., etc. So you hear the same hymn and the same song in every such family of all sorts of in different places in Palestinian territories, from different organizational backgrounds. You hear just the same, and I've lived long enough among Palestinians to distrust or to mistrust those speeches given to the press, which means. What I really need, and I've tried to do during the last 2 years, is to wait, always to wait, not to go immediately to a family, immediately 2 days, 3 days after the suicide attack, and to listen a lot from the nearby surrounding, from friends of mine whose relatives or nearby neighbors or friends have been involved in suicide attacks. This gives me some more, I think, perspective, some more space to the understanding of this phenomenon. In a very tragic way, I came very, very close in the last half year, very, very close to a story of suicide bombers, without choosing. I have neighbors who became friends, or actually they were friends and then neighbors, and we have strengthened our relations as friends and as friends then, who originally come from one of the villages along the now constructed separation wall or security fence or security barrier or whatever we name it. They have lost this family. I mean, they are direct relatives, parents and brothers, have lost something out of the 60 dunams that they had left from 48. In 48, it was 100. Then they decided to stay on the Jordanian side of the green line because that's where they had 60% of the 60 dunams out of the 100. And now, because of this fence, which goes deep into Palestinian territory, because there is a nearby Israeli settlement called Alfei Menashe, they lost another 50 of their 60 dunams. These were the dunams, this was the space, the piece of land that my friend, my neighbor, a lawyer, defending children, he thought, oh, in time we'll build there a house for the whole family, to recreate, to bring the children from the city. His brothers, who had lost by time their jobs in Israel, they had all been workers in Israel and contractors in Israel, they had lost the jobs in the last 10 years. So they thought, okay, so we'll now recultivate the land. They paid they invested a lot of efforts, work, and money to put away the stones. It's a very rocky land, and to have their greenhouses and to plant new trees, etc. And now it's all gone. Especially one of the brothers was severely affected. I interviewed this brother, the youngest brother, about a year ago, more than a year ago. I think it was one of the first articles that were published in Israeli press about the effects of the wall, the fence. It was not clear yet where this fence will go, what it will affect. We only still saw the signs of the Israeli surveyors coming to putting red crosses on greenhouses and some trees and some rocks to designate the future fence or the future upgraded green line. And he showed me, he calculated what would be lost. And then with time, we visited every 2 months, 3 months. Every 2 months, 3 months, there was another greenhouse which had to be gone. He stopped even the existing ones, he stopped cultivating or stopped bringing, stopped even taking the cucumbers or so. And then he told me, you know, and I rewrote it. He told me, you know, I don't understand how Israel thinks it's going to bring security. Because if we are losing everything, we'll be only pushed to the corner and motivated to have all kind of acts of despair. I wrote it, I published, this was the last sentence of the article, and I thought, well, if he is aware of it, he won't do this act of despair. And I knew what he meant, actually, some sort of suicide, personal, physical suicide, or family suicide, or whatever. Half a year ago, I see his brother at home in Ramallah. His face is Asian, you know, gray. And he says, my brother was arrested. At first we thought that the Israeli intelligence wanted to get out information of him about, I don't know, friends or so. And then slowly, slowly it became clear that he was involved in a suicide attack. In a way, he was driving two kids, I could say kids, from Askar refugee camp, from a refugee camp in Nablus. He was driving them to a settlement where they exploded. They managed to break some, in the explosion, to break some windows in the settlement, and they were killed. In a matter of 2 weeks, I think, he was caught. It was not difficult for the Israeli intelligence to find him. Another a nephew in this family was also involved, and he's wanted till today. The two suicide bombers who were killed, their houses were demolished about 2 months ago. Now the family of my neighbor's friends is actually living in permanent fear that their house will also be demolished by the Israeli authorities, by the Israeli army, because this is the habit that also when you have somebody arrested and charge it, still you punish before even guilt is proven by demolishing the house. And the notion, the Israeli notion, and this kind of demolitions is deterring others from doing it. We haven't really received this proof so far, because the phenomenon of suicide bombings is only expanding. Anyway, I've been witnessing this neighbor's friend's slow descent into despair. This neighbor of mine, friend of mine, just a little bit before his brother had been arrested, he started going to gym lessons, understanding that he has to take care of himself. They started to paint the house or whatever. Now he stopped everything. He cannot. His only thought at first was about his brother being interrogated. Then the other thought was about the house will be demolished, not. Then about the land which was taken, and he was angry with his brother. His brother was not young. His brother is 30, has 4 children. How come he involved himself in such an adventure, of which results? I mean, he could know. I mean, he was a bit some sane political background. He knew that Israelis are immediately finding people who are involved. What motivated him to do this act of despair and implicating an entire family, and he has 4 children and young children. This brother might spend 20 years at least in jail for his involvement. They are all aware of it, that the suicide bombings are not only inflicting disaster and trauma and death on Israeli Jews and Israelis, but on their society and families as well. And still it is a phenomenon. And still when you listen to them on official press and official reporting and television, people support it. And I know what the family really thinks, but I'm sure that if they are being interviewed, they won't dare to say what they say, what they tell me. 3 weeks ago, this neighbor friend went to see his family in the village. It took him, I think, it's a drive, it would take me 40 minutes to drive with my car in Jewish roads, which means roads that are only for Jewish traffic. and these are the main roads in the West Bank. So what would take me 40 minutes took him maybe 3-4 hours with the children in terrible village roads, rural roads, on the mountains, on rocky roads, rocky mountains, whatever. And they got back in the same way from this village where they stayed one night, all coughing. Some children got almost asthmatic symptoms because the fence is being constructed just maybe 3-5 meters away from their house. Not only has it taken most of the land, but it's also just near the house. And everybody is coughing. Nothing is green. Everything is covered with dust. And permanent noise of bulldozers and orders of the contractors to their workers, etc. So the neighbor, coming very unhappy, he says, "Now I understand why my brother did it." This was 4 weeks ago. Just recently, and I think that it became very famous, the story of Hennadi Jaradat from Nablus, who blew herself up in an Israeli restaurant in Haifa. I think it was made clear by reporting all over the world, and in Israel as well, that her brother had been killed by Israeli troops while they were searching for the cousin. And so her brother was killed, and her cousin and fiancé had been killed by Israeli troops some 8 years ago. So she was clearly motivated, and she was also talking about this by revenge. But, you know, I'm a journalist, so I'm telling stories. It's not an academic, it's an academical invitation, and I'm telling stories, but I think it's important because the theories come out of the stories. Now I'll tell you a little something which was not written. I didn't write it to the Israeli press. She comes originally from a village called Silat al-Harthiyeh, northwest of Jenin. But her family has lived for many years in Jenin itself. Now, 5 of the victims of her act of revenge or despair, 5 of her victims out of 21 were Palestinian Israelis. All of them, I think, Christians, but they were all Palestinians. 2 of them come from a village in Israel, Palestinian village in Israel, called Fasuta. 2 of them are relatives of a friend of mine, a Palestinian lawyer, another Palestinian lawyer, but with an Israeli identity card. And by the way, she is a relative of the famous author Anton Shamas. So these 2 of them, 2 relatives who were killed, and this friend lawyer is working in a Palestinian NGO in defense of Palestinian prisoners in Ramallah. This NGO is called Ad-Damir. Now, another employee in this Ad-Damir NGO is a guy with the same name as the suicide bomber, Jaradat, and from the same village. They are not direct relatives. They are. They have 5 generations back, they had a common grandfather, so they are not considered relatives. But this is another unbelievable meeting point of perpetrator and victims, and all Palestinians, and all proud Palestinians, and Palestinians who are struggling in their ways for their independence and liberation. I think it's important to know what the society says about the individual suicide bombers, how it explains this phenomenon. Before we come to the theories of Israeli intelligence agents or American intelligence agents who use the prisoners in Israel as a laboratorium for their researches. First of all, I think most of the people are sure that those who commit suicide are not social cases, are not people in personal despair. The great majority of them. And the more the organization is religious, the more chances we have to prove that this is really so. that those who went into a suicide attack did not have bad life, personal life. In the sense they had a job, they had a career, they were not terribly poor. This is a general understanding within the society. So there is no personal motivation here. I mean, personal egotistic motivation here. Another thing which the society says regarding those suicide bombers, or another phenomenon here, is that they really do not understand why the world thinks that this is worse, that these suicide bombings are worse than killing 15 civilians, but from a plane. They think it's even, this is noble. A person goes and kills himself or herself for the cause. True, it's killing civilians, but it's after, but he's giving up the most precious thing, his or her own life. So this is a noble way of fighting. This is an understanding among people, not necessarily religious. Another thing that I've heard from many people, neighbors and family, that in the last 3 years, all those who went into suicide attacks had been exposed personally to terrible cases of death and killing of civilians by Israeli soldiers. I started to collect such, more than 200 suicide attacks out of about 270 tried and failed. So people, family, neighbors, friends claimed that all of them had witnessed some sort of a terrible terrible death of another. Hanadi, as I said, Hanadi Jaradat witnessed her brother being killed. There is a woman in the Haitian refugee camp. She witnessed a neighbor who was killed in the Haitian refugee camp during an Israeli invasion into Bethlehem. Now, the Haitian refugee camp had a position. They decided not to fight the Israeli tanks. The Fatah leaders of this camp told a few of the armed people in the camp, "You don't dare to shoot from here. It's a lost battle, and we don't want to see the Haitian destroyed." So the Haitian responded to the Israeli invasion with silence. And still, I think 3 or 4 people were killed in their own homes from passing. Maybe there were some shots somewhere in distance, but certainly not from these houses. And Ayat Arhas from the Haitian saw 2 children kind of touching the blood of their father or drowning in the blood of their father, an ordinary guy. Another thing, I listened, there was a debate in Ramallah a year ago about how to proceed with the Intifada. And a professor at Birzeit University, woman, she said, we have to strategize, we have to be more attentive to the world's opinion, we have to be clever. She didn't use moral arguments. She said, we are allowed to use armed struggle against occupation forces in the occupied territories, which means both settlers, settler civilians, and soldiers. The Palestinians do not see settlers as civilians. And then a young student of hers got up and she said, I'm sorry, but I don't see that your way has brought us to anything. What has it given us? For the first 4 or 5 months of this intifada, especially Fatah people and others and other gunmen tried this way of armed shooting, and this is after a phase of I wouldn't say non-violent, because okay, it was throwing stones, but throwing stones at military vehicles and soldiers, but there was a phase of mass resistance, and then a phase of armed resistance, but against Israeli forces and against Israelis in the occupied territories, and it brought nothing, only more bloodshed on the Palestinian side. So what can you offer us? This is another thing said by Palestinians. Another thing said by Palestinians, and I heard this from an activist in the first Intifada, a real hero of the first Intifada, and he said, yes, you have this supreme technology, military technology, that sees somebody at night and can shoot a missile at somebody at night. So what we have is only a bunch of nails and some nitroglycerin, or I don't know what they call it, and all kind of chemical materials that you find in agricultural stuff, in agricultural chemicals. And if we had planes and missiles, we would have used it for sure. I don't think that he knows that he echoed Franz Fanon. But he said it, and this is the general understanding. People are stupefied, and I share this, because this Israeli amazing technological superiority, which can tell if there is a child shaking the fence now and the gate in the fence between the lens and between his village and his school, so they can tell if it's a child, so that they can come and open the door, the gate, maybe 2 hours later, or they can tell if it is somebody who tries to infiltrate. They have such amazing technology that we cannot even know about all of it. So all the Palestinians feel that they are subject to this omnipotence of amazing technology, not only Israeli but American. And they are, what they have is some kilograms of nails and other things and explosives, homemade explosives.
You heard the first half of an hour-long talk on suicide bombers by the Israeli writer and journalist Amira Haas. In part two of this program, Amira Haas gives a courageous and very detailed report on the Palestinian organizations that play a role in the suicide bombings. Hamas, the Islamic Jihad, the Popular Front, and Fatah. I hope you have a pen handy to take down a phone number. You can find more information on Amira Haas on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get information how to order a copy of the complete talk by Amira Haas on suicide bombers by calling us. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone, or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Moriah Gelardin. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.